Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we engage in lively and thoughtful conversations with professionals in the nonprofit world. My name is David Langiuli.
And I'm Michelle Malloy-Dillon. And David and I are here with a dear friend and colleague from the Coactive Training Institute, Edwin Vega. Edwin is a certified leadership coach and facilitator. He's a faculty member at the Coactive Training Institute, where he teaches leadership and coach training. And he's a staunch advocate for equity in who receives coaching and gets access to coach training. In addition to his role at CTI, he also serves as a track holder for their Coactive Scholarship Program. Edwin is Puerto Rican and a first-generation college graduate three times over. And prior to his commitment, serving as a leadership development coach, he was a professional opera singer, and he's a Grammy Award winner. Mm. Welcome, Edwin. It's so wonderful to have you here with us.
Hey, thanks so much.
And I should say for the audience, Michelle's being a bit modest, and we're not shy here. Michelle is also on the faculty at the Coaches Training Institute, or now called the Coactive Training Institute, with Edwin.
Yes, so it's such an honor to have two of my colleagues in two different parts of my world here with me, David and Edwin. So Edwin, you have written a great blog for our fundraising leadership community about your love and your passion of working with young people to really empower them to be the best that they can in the world. Tell us a little bit about what got you started or inspired to do this kind of work.
Yeah, you know, even your mention of equity in the intro is kind of connected to this as well. The EDGE Foundation is a foundation that helps get young people and children access to coaching as early as 9 years old, which is kind of revolutionary if you think about it. Typically, most people that get access to coaching are board members, especially historically board members, athletes, high-level performers. And the founder, his name is Neil Peterson, really saw the value that coaching gave his children who struggled with different learning disabilities. And when he retired, they said, why don't you do what you did for us and actually get kids access to coaching? So he started the foundation, first getting giving kids access to one-to-one coaching, which you can imagine is expensive, hard to scale. And then over time, he switched the model where we now go into school communities and train their staff, teachers, and community volunteers how to coach on a really simple five-step coaching model, where the student gets 20 minutes of coaching every week. And it's really focused on helping improve executive functions for young people. And you just see it across the board where the students just feel more seen, they're more feel more closely to an adult. I mean, in what school is a child getting 20 minutes of undivided attention from an adult? So it's just a really great thing. So I met someone in actually the Coactive Training Institute who worked for them. They brought me on as like a fidelity manager to support the schools, and just quickly got on the roster to become a trainer and just have loved it. And for me, just to see people who typically don't get access to coaching to then know they're going to be giving coaching to people who really don't have access to coaching, young people, it's kind of revolutionary in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it can be so influential for a young person to have something as unique as coaching support. And it's so true what you point out, like, we usually think of coaching as the top executives get coaching support. And to think
not in the nonprofit world. We are very aligned on this, Edwin. I mean, we see it every day, nonprofit organizations unwilling to support even their leaders with coaching. Now I'm trying to even talking about frontliners or volunteers.
Yeah.
Or a board, I mean, just nothing, right, man.
It's well, David, the tide is changing, I think. I can share, I'm doing a couple of different engagements now with nonprofits. First is with SUS, which is in the New York City area, New York State, serving folks, and it's services for the underserved. Yeah. It's been around for many years. And what's lovely is they really help adults get access to resources that really might be difficult for them based on different disabilities that they may have and challenges in their life. I'm currently coaching two of their 8 executives. Their whole executive team is getting coaching. They got 360s, whole Excellent. Deep dive. Also in LA, I'm working with a group called Services This is actually servicing young people, and it's called SPY, and they really about protecting youth. And they work with at-risk youth in the LA community, again, actually coaching their mid-level managers and even new managers. So it is spreading out there. We're even doing a mixture of one-on-one coaching and workshops. So, you know, it's slowly changing that paradigm. I do think, though, the general knowledge of access of coaching still feels very elite, very restricted or limited in general. But I just feel like the tides are beginning to shift some.
Wow, that's music to our ears.
Yeah, for sure. It's great. And, you know, I sense that, I feel like for everything that everyone went through with COVID, that there is more of an awareness of coaching out there in the world as a support system. Once again, it does tend to lie more within the working world as a way to support employees throughout all of that COVID. I certainly noticed, you know, my coaching business ticked up with that, and, you know, employers needing their employees to have that support and to work through all that change. Absolutely. So I know that has been beneficial in terms of knowing the benefits of coaching
out there
in so many different ways.
Yeah. I mean, before I'm tempted, we were having a conversation before we got on the podcast about what's happening in nonprofits in particular with some of the Gen Xers and baby boomers not coming back. And there's a case to be made for supporting them through some coaching. We'll talk about that towards the end of the podcast. But before we jump into that, Edwin, I'm you know, you wrote about, and this is for the audience really, because a lot of people just don't know what coaching is. So why don't you tell, you know, I love Michael's Bungay Stainier's description, you know, ask more, tell less. So why don't you share, you know, ask more, tell less. So why don't you share, because you wrote a lot of good stuff, and that's true for youth also, right? So
why don't you share? Of course, I mean, think about it. We are always telling young people, stop this, start that, don't do this, go make your bed. I mean, we are berating them with orders, right? And we think we're helping them. And obviously, young people do need adult support. They need guardrails, you know, to really kind of live in a world that's like safe for them and things like that. What I think is, it's just a muscle that we overuse. We really overcorrect and use this muscle of telling kids what to do. We feel like it's faster. Because, you know, think about all the time challenges that everyone's going through. Everyone is feeling pressed for time, overworked, overstressed, burnout. We think that it's easier to tell someone what to do rather than help them build their own agency. So it's kind of like a little lie we tell ourselves, even though it's not true. We know it's not true. And what we do is actually, in that mode of telling someone what to do, we set up the situation that they always have to come to someone else outside of their own agency, outside of their own thoughts, for direction about what to do next. Yes, even sometimes on the little, but also on the big too, like big decisions. So it's something really big. I mean, for me, that's why I decided to title the article, Stop Telling Your Kids What to Do.
Are you suggesting, Edwin, to our audience that executive directors should not direct?
Yes,
we are saying that. It's true.
Totally.
That's radical, man. You're a radical, Edwin.
Totally. And you know, this is what's great is like when you really have the time to break it down with someone and you ask them, like, do you really think you're helping them in that situation to put out that what you'll call a little fire? And immediately you can see it on their face, you can see it on their expressions. The answer is no. But the nuance of time, or the mirage of what time is, that we don't have enough time, usually that pushes us away. And care, and obviously parents, you know, they're the superheroes of the pandemic, you know, just really having to hold up a lot in the middle of that. And then you imagine teachers teaching over Zoom. I mean, the difficulties of that have just been compounded. So, you know, my inspiration for the article is like, actually, there's so much value in not telling people what to do. Obviously, in instances, there are times where it's needed.
Yeah. And it's a trap. It's a trap for both parties. It's a trap for the kids or the direct reports, having to go to the person and get permission. It's also a trap for the executive director or the parent or whoever that is to feel that they have to have all of the answers all of the time.
And that's such a burden.
Oh, it is.
It's a burden. I mean, my definition of coaching, or when I share with people, it really anchors closely to the International Coach Federation's definition, where it's a creative process where as coach and client come together to maximize the client's personal and professional potential. That's really at the heart. So even though a student wants to talk about their math course or a test that they're going to take, my goal is too, is like, well, how does this impact you outside of school? Like, what are your hobbies outside of school? What do you love to do? If you had the perfect day that you could design, what would that look like? Actually, in our coaching model, the very first thing that we do is build rapport. Usually everyone's getting down to business. All right, what are we going to talk about? You're going to talk about your math tests. No, first we focus on landing the plane. Can we actually connect as humans, whether it's a manager at an organization to connect to their teams, to see how are they, where are they, body, mind, and spirit, or just to bring a little bit more positivity and connection before we get going? That's really important. And we do that specifically in our coaching model. And the second one is we let the students pick the topic. Mm-hmm. Even if you know the student's been expelled last week, they got detention, they didn't turn in their book report, the student gets to choose the topic. It's so important, again, to build that executive function of agency and helping them really direct their life.
Yeah. Well, I'm mindful of the what we were talking about, the temptation for leaders or teachers, you know, in the context of schools with children, to want to, you know, help them solve the problem. And there is a way of doing that as a coach or being coach-like, where you create an environment or the space where an individual can solve their own problems.
you're kind of walking towards the cliff. That's what I feel like. When we introduce this to people in our training, it's like, oh no, but the kid's gonna harm themselves. I mean, right. You can tell the anxiety really builds up.
Right.
Because they've set up the system that a student starts walking at a 1, 2, 3, and they already pull them back.
Right.
Not even letting them get close to the 100 is where the cliff is. And already at the first numbers, they're getting scared. So that's the first thing, is like, let's actually really look at where are you actually holding back their potential to step into really directing their own life, versus we have this general thinking as that every generation goes on. And I ask my parents, they say the same thing. They think the generations, most recent generations, are lost or not as focused. And that's kind of a trope that's not true. But I think if we keep doing this enabling thing, of course, someone when they're 18 is going to have a very tough transition to adult life if you've been kind of guarding them from failing, you know, and giving them the experiences to try and come up with their own ideas. And what we find is that kids right away come up with their own steps. I mean, they are just kind of in it. They're the leaders of their life, not us adults.
Well, go ahead.
There's something about speed here that's coming up for me. When you mentioned, like, you know, stopping someone from running toward the cliff, our first instinct is to stop them fast, directly, and tell them what to do. Stop, right? And sometimes there is a cliff, so I don't want to, you know, say
that's actually a great thing. Like, when there is a cliff, of course you're going to stop them, and we want you to intercede. But when you treat everything like a nail and you have a hammer,
Yeah. So sometimes it's actually a matter of slowing down. What might be a direction that, you know, you want to go, or what's the best decision here for you? You know, I mean, it's like, and that can be a difficult place for someone who's in a mentor, teacher, coach, like parent, whatever it is, relationship, boss. Yeah. To actually slow it down, which actually has that ability, Edwin, that you pointed to, of deepening that relationship. Like, well, what's going on here?
Yeah. Well, the big lie, there is another, you know, big lie or, way we convince ourselves, or some story we tell ourselves, that there's not enough time to coach someone and let them come up with their own resolution. The quick and easy path is for me to tell them what to do, and then I'm moving on to the next thing. Now, there is expedience in that. I want to say
Mm-hmm. Immediate expedience. But it may not be the best.
You know, you may not be getting the best results. I'm thinking now in the organizational context. You create, if dare I say the word, slaves. They become slaves. They come to you for everything. And we're not about creating slaves in the workplace. No.
Well, you know, a metaphor comes in. It could be because I am holding cards in my hand. But a metaphor is almost like when we actually ask someone what they think is needed, even again, a young kid, even if we're doing young person, or even imagine an entry-level person or a mid-level director somewhere at an organization. When we ask them what they think, it's actually a version of investing. We're actually putting an investment in them so that they grow these muscles. And what happens is when we do that fast transaction of telling them what to do, or as Michael Bungay Stenger says, you know, the use your advice monster. Yeah. What happens is I think it's almost like a debit transaction. It's not huge, but it does take away from like the investment that could be made. And I feel like, you know, as a society, we need to keep moving towards asking that really and make hopefully see that as an investment in the relationship and how that person shows up.
I love this metaphor. It brings to mind, like, it's like what we want to actually do is put money in someone's account rather than take it out.
And who doesn't want money in
who doesn't want money in their account? It's like by really empowering people to make great decisions on their own, or to have that empowered feeling of being heard and being and their opinion being valued and being able to have some agency to make decisions on
which young people don't get. I mean, I'm generalizing here, but in general, the young people feel like they're not being heard. And so why do we have a culture where usually in their teenage years, kids are rebelling and things like this? I think that kind of stems from that. We even had, in an extreme case, the students know that the conversations are private versus confidential. So they know that as a teacher that they have reported mandating that they have to do and things like that. And a student was going somewhere in their coaching conversation towards something that needed to be mandatedly told. And the coach says, I just want to remind you, do you remember what we talked about privacy in these conversations? Yes, I remember. The student then tells something that has to be mandated. And the coach says, you know, we have to stop. I have to go tell the principal. And the student is, you know, obviously impacted by that. And the coach says, would you like to come with me? Mm-hmm. And the student says, I'll go with you, but can you first talk to the principal? It's like, sure. They go to the principal's office. And then by the time they get there, the student starts the conversation with the principal. So, you know, just even in that, like a level of agency so that they feel, can you imagine an 11-year-old feeling that they get to take charge of their life at that age? And of course, as parents, we're providing guardrails and safety in the midst of that. But can we really put them in the spotlight there?
Right. Ooh, yeah. That just sent chills up my spine, that story, because that is so powerful. And you know that child is going to remember that.
Oh my God.
For the rest of their life.
Totally.
Yes.
And they were in charge the whole time,
right? That's
right. The coach says,
hey,
do you remember?
Someone taking things away.
Absolutely. And I think in previous situations, like, the student brings something up. I run. I leave the student by themselves, maybe. I go start this drama chain of telling a bunch of different people, then telling the principal versus being real with the student. You know the direction we're going in. Do you want to go in there? Yes. Great. Okay, now you've broken a rule of our agreement here. How do you want to mend this? I'll go with you to the office. Like, how empowering is that?
Yes.
11 years old.
Right. Right.
That's when we should be thinking about building humans, you know, from a very-
Yeah, those are the kind of adults we really want to raise. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll bring it to the adult realm, since that's the word in the space. There's, you use the word agency. There's a lot of research on satisfaction and fulfillment in the workplace around autonomy, you know, and it when people have autonomy to make their own decisions, to make mistakes, to clean up their own messes, that's then the workplace is also a much more satisfying and fulfilling place to work in. So that's what coaching could bring. You know, on the one hand, you're talking about the miracle of coaching with children, which I have two myself, so I can attest to it, and so does Michelle. And as parents, we take more of a coach-like approach, but this also holds for managers and leaders in organizations where they can create more autonomy, and therefore, you know, the workplace becomes more sticky and people want to work in a place like that. Yeah.
Which brings me to the great resignation that we've mentioned briefly here. You know, people are quitting in droves. They want to have more control, whatever the reasons are. But as a manager or a business owner or someone working in nonprofits, and you want to retain your staff, these skills are really important to be able to empower people to have some agency on their own.
Yeah, and I'm curious, Edwin, what are you seeing with the students as far as them being retained in school, them being more engaged with school?
Well, I mean, I think even when we think about just humans in general, we always want to be seen. Mm-hmm. If you think about social media, it may have its evils to some degree, but the beauty of it is like it actually allows you to step forward and present yourself and be seen. And I feel like the biggest human condition that we need to attend to is helping people feel seen. So for students, like in this realm, when we think about it, or even employees that you're talking about are leaving, employees want to feel both independent and connected. They actually want both of those polarities, which are polarities in their existence. Mm-hmm. They want both of those to be actively engaged, right? So how do we actually create communities like that? So with our children too, if you think about it, there are issues of retention, right? Mm-hmm. Typically students that have executive function challenges drop out at least 3 times more likely than others. And then the statistic gets more grave and more severe as you keep going on, where obviously people barely go on to higher levels of education and then job rates and things like that. So super important in terms of retention. And we're finding that a lot of the schools that we work with, school districts, are actually helping students to have a lot of different insecurities around food, shelter, and things of that nature, and just having a lot of success last year, just before the pandemic, or I guess 2 years now ago, in the Palm Springs School District, which does have a severe homeless problem with youth. The Edge Foundation worked with volunteer coaches to coach students that were homeless in that school district. And what they define homeless is a big range, whether it means a different home 3 times a week, where the student has to keep moving to different houses, or extremes of one student literally was living in a dumpster trying to get to college. I mean, that's so, I mean, like I worry about so many things in the world, and that is, nothing really compares to the true gravity that I think some young people are dealing with. And to have a coach who can be with them and talk to them on a cell phone. And what we found was that there was a 90% increase in attendance at schools. 70% of them increased to getting to a passing or almost passing grade level. Mm-hmm. It might've been the magic of the coaches and what they were doing. What I really make up it was, is that an adult was interested in being in relationship with them in a way that put them in the spotlight. And again, not telling them what to do, actually helping them chart the course of their life, which you can imagine, like, how could I even advise someone who is in situations I can't even imagine being in? But can we treat them as the expert in their life?
Well, one thing that you're pointing to is there's so much in those situations where the child is completely out of control as to what can happen in mm-hmm. their life. And so having the ability to work with someone who's a coach to be able to pull out what is that little piece of your life, even if it's you get to go to the principal's office with me as we discuss this together, mm-hmm. if that's a choice, that is an element of control that they're able to choose. It's not somebody choosing for them.
You know, and you can even have it on a really simple scale. We had one student in New York City who was kind of like, I don't want to be coaching. You know, the coach came in and the coach is like, well, we have this designated time. I mean, at one point we don't coach students who don't want to be coached because we mm-hmm. know that everyone has to be really a big yes. Mm-hmm. And the student was like, all right, well, let's go to the gymnasium. If you can, I'll answer a question if you make a basketball shot. Coach is like, okay, he's kind of like rolling his eyes. He's kind of playing into it. Well, the student didn't realize that this person was on the NCAA team at his college. So they had a full coaching session that day, but the student gave in because he created the parameters and the coach agreed, sure. Even as silly as it is.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it wasn't this big thing of like, I am quote unquote getting coached. I'm actually having a conversation that's actually kind of fun. And the coach was super creative, right?
Yeah.
To jump in and kind of follow the student. So it's just, even on the other extreme of lightness, it can have a lot of fun to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's that's bringing up for me is something that we hold very sacred as coaches, is that whether it's a young person or an adult, human beings are not broken. They don't need to be fixed. Coaching is not for fixing. Okay. And so in the adult context, we'll have, you know, boards send us executive directors to be coached to, you know what I mean? Like they need coaching or they're going to be fired. Well, I usually say, well, if you're looking for me to fix this person, then I'm not taking this assignment.
And that's even with kids. I'm hearing, as you're saying, like that people aren't broken or fixed. We actually mean people, like young people.
Yes.
We're talking about a four-year-old, you know, like they have agency. Of course, agency at four looks very different from agency at 40. But it still doesn't mean we can't give a sense of responsibility.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
And these young people as well.
Yeah. There was something else I wanted to add to that was, if nothing else, at whatever stage of life you're coaching or being coached, it's the coach listens. And to add to your metaphor about debits or credits, Stephen Covey used to say that like listening is a deposit in a person's emotional bank account. And that's what coaches do. We make deposits into people's emotional bank accounts.
Yeah, I mean, look, listening is a commodity right now these days, right? Like for people listening on podcasts, I have my phone up mocking as if I'm on my cell phone, but there are so many things we have to compete against,
right?
Like notifications, distractions. It's just like, we really have to go back to basic fundamentals. There's I think Rich Litvin has a book that he co-authored called The Prosperous Coach. And in it, he says you can get good coaching from a lamppost, right? Because it won't interrupt you. It might be the one space where no one's interrupting you. You know, we need that time to not be interrupted. And coaching's one amazing structure that can do that.
Yeah.
Well, you can tell that all three of us are really passionate about coaching,
not at all,
and being coaches. And and it reminds me too that, Edwin, I want you to talk a little bit about the Coactive Scholarship Program through the Coactive Training Institute, because this is a new program that you have been instrumental in helping to begin for people to be trained as coaches. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, in my introduction, you mentioned, you know, I really believe in equity has kind of two lenses from in the coaching world. One, who gets access to coaching, really important. And then the second level is actually who gets trained as a coach, because we know when you train someone as a coach, it actually allows them to scale the impact they can have. This is why bringing coaching to organizations is important, because when you coach a leader, even at any kind of organization, that leader will actually create a ripple effect in their environment. So for me, getting access about who gets trained is really important. I started a private scholarship program. I met two guys on the 7 train in New York City. I was actually reading a book. And, you know, in New York City, you kind of are really cautious about space when you're on the train. And I see these two guys get close to me. I'm like, oh gosh, I put the book closer to my face as if that would hide me, which does not work. And then I heard one of them say, excuse me, sir, can I ask you what you're reading? I'm like, oh my gosh. I said, oh, Mastering Leadership. And they both look at each other. And I go, we love leadership. And these guys can't be more than like 22, 23. And we ended up having this amazing talk on the train. They decided to come to a free Coactive event that we had, a Coactive intro event. They showed up 2 weeks later. The whole room flipped upside down with their energy, their focus, their tenacity. And I had gone to an event that I felt really inspired by. And I thought for my birthday, I'd raise money. The community raised $7,000 within 4 days, so quickly, which we then put towards their education for them to go through coach training. And then a year later, the Coactive Training Institute really decided to make a move towards equity, especially in the midst of COVID. What was a wild was they were having challenges in their own business. And instead of being kind of protective, they decided to step into abundance and say, all right, we're going through changes, but let's actually expand here. And it was also in response to the racial uprising that was happening through the violence towards Black folks in the US in 2020. And they said, we want to start a scholarship program. And they kind of let me run it on my own. And it was amazing. I'm talking about the leadership model of a leader in front. They literally allowed me to be in front to guide the ship, but knowing I was fully supported. And we've now awarded over $280,000 to folks within a year and maybe a year and 4 months. We first had a pilot group. And what's great, it's been all volunteer run. Community members have been serving to help create the program and then also uplift it. So while I'm leading the scholarship program, I have no engagement in the applications. I'm actually leading a group of 18 volunteers who went through each application, reviewed them, selected folks. And there's actually two pathways. The one pathway is for called the Opportunity Scholarship, which is for people who have significant financial need, and they can prove that through different various means. And the other one is for high potential folks who have high potential leadership, regardless of any aspect of their background. And what we found was we just found this beautiful rainbow of representation, whether it's the spectrum of gender, needs, ethnicities. And so it's been a really great first year, and we're hoping to open it up again in the spring.
Yeah, fantastic. What a wonderful ripple.
Yeah,
that's being created.
Like wild. So big kudos to the leaders at CTI and their executive team for really stepping up. And even though it seems like the first big splash of scholarship, scholarship has been in our system for years and in different versions. And I think this is the first time where they're actually wanting to make it in perpetuity of their organization, that it actually lives as its own breathing thing, no matter what the circumstances are around it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're living your life purpose in this
I know,
way.
Yeah, of course I'll do this. Like,
yay.
You know, it's your life purpose when it feels like easy work.
Yes.
You don't think you should get paid for it. And I feel very lucky in that capacity of that. And there's just a lot of grace. And a really cool thing that we're doing with the scholarship then is when someone gets awarded a class, they then are donating 10 hours of community service in their communities. So there's an aspect of pay it forward. So we'll have donated over 2,800 hours of community service from the individuals. And that could be as simple as helping your neighbor get groceries during COVID, or actually donating coaching directly to someone as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wonderful. That's great.
Well, let's bring it home, Michelle.
Yeah. So we love to give the audience something to try from all of our podcasts. So what would you like to challenge the audience to try out, Edwin?
Well, it's a version that comes out of the article that I wrote, which is around stops and starts. And if you're listening, this is really a great way for you to self-coach yourself. I actually believe that when I'm coaching a client, my goal is that I'm not their coach forever. I want them to start coaching themselves, really building that own agency. So I want to introduce something that's a really simple coaching technique for yourself. So think about an area that you might be having some challenge in. It might be an area that you want some difference in, maybe some more satisfaction. And thinking about that situation, what's one thing that you could start doing that would improve that situation? It can be small as anything, it can be as big as you like, but one thing you can start doing, whether it's an action or a mindset that you can take on, that actually will get you one step closer to your goal. And then on the other side of that, what's one thing you could stop doing, like something that's not helping you get closer to your goal? We all have those. What's one thing you could stop doing? It might be, I could stop doubting myself. It could be stopping an action that's actually getting in the way of your goal. What's one thing that you can identify that if you stop doing it, it would get you one step closer? And that's a simple, different thing that you can do, even just to self-coach yourself. And imagine too, if you have employees coming to you constantly, because we talked about a lot about employee engagement, before you give them the answer, because you know the answer, that might even be true. Imagine that you're true. It's true. You know the answer. You might ask them first, what do you think? What's one thing you can stop doing in this situation that would improve the quality and engagement in this situation? Just, it might be nice to offer them that gift so that they become more of a collaborator with you in these situations, and you get to ask more and tell less.
Yeah, thank you, Edwin. That's a wonderful thing to try out. So simple and so profound in so many ways. Yeah. And we'd like to share a free resource, and we'll put this link in our podcast notes as well. We have an ebook called Managing for Retention, and it does talk about many of the similar things that we've talked about today on how to retain your employees. Listening is a big part of it. So yeah, we'll put that link in the show
notes. No better time for retention. a resource on retention.
Yeah, well, thank you, Edwin. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the great conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much. What a great time together.
This podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're enjoying the show, you can help us continue to bring thoughtful content to you with a monthly or annual contribution. This supports our production costs and keeps the show ad-free. Make a contribution today using the link in the show notes. Now, go put it into practice.